Welcome to Holistic Trauma Healing, a podcast that empowers you to heal trauma in the same way it has affected you as a whole person. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. I have discovered a profound path to healing trauma that allows us to move out of the role of victim and into the role of empowered and conscious creator of our best possible reality. I offer hope, healing insights, and practical tips as you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and how to weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past.
Welcome everyone back to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am joined today by Peggy Hukasian, who is a certified somatic attachment therapist, a Reiki practitioner, and a yoga teacher. She's the founder of the Sisterhood Agency, which is a women's alignment coaching platform, and the creator of Daughters of Culture, a women's ethical, sustainable clothing brand. Peggy is well-versed in holistic modalities, breathwork, trauma-informed techniques, all while providing women with integrative, sustainable mental and emotional support. She is dedicated to teaching embodiment work as a way of exploring our human evolution, healing, growth, and integration. Peggy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. I'm so excited to be with everyone today.
Yeah. So as we were discussing before we hit the record button, this is literally the first time we've ever met. I don't know that much about you other than what is in your bio. So besides your bio, can you please share with me and my listeners maybe what you do and how you got into the work that you do, and just what is a short version of your story?
Sure. You know, that's kind of hard because I like to deep dive into everything. I'm an immigrant woman, and a lot of the work that I do is a combination of just different things that I know that I really needed in order to heal a lot of the generational trauma that I was born into. So designing women's clothing was a form of expression for me. I loved being able to support women transform into the beauty that I always saw in them. And then moving through working with clothing, I started doing women's coaching, and I loved working with women one-on-one, being able to just support them through their transformation and areas where they really were feeling stuck. So all of these areas for me were parts of myself that I was constantly working on, and I was working so deeply with my own stuff that I was able to support other women in those areas as well. So I love that I get to kind of like do different things. You know, I'm a Gemini, so for me, variety is really important. Okay. So you understand me. Like, there's just this variety that I think, you know, we're able to tap into, and there's different modalities of my work that I can really easily cross over. So it really, I love being able to support women in so many different ways, and I'm constantly learning and wanting to be a good student in my own process. So I want to be able to embody the work first so that I can really hold the space for other women to do that as well.
Yeah. Nice. What are your moon and rising signs? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. It's so funny. Right before we were going to jump on, you're like, do you want to ask me any questions? And I was going to be like, what's your sign? That's what I wanted to know. My moon sign is Sagittarius.
Me too.
What?
I'm not even kidding. Do not tell me you're a Pisces rising.
I'm not. Okay. I have very little water in my chart. I'm very fiery and airy. My rising is actually a Taurus, which I think this is where my work ethics comes from. Like, I'm very grounded. I don't start something that I don't finish. I'm like a long-term, goal-driven, committed person. If I was a Gemini all the time, I would be like traveling the world right now.
Yeah. We would just be having a party all the time.
Exactly. But you're a Pisces rising.
Pisces rising. Yeah. Gemini sun, Sagittarius moon, Pisces rising.
Yeah.
So you know your human design.
Of course. I'm a generator all the way.
Okay. Projector. Yeah. I'm a
projector. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So that's actually one of I love finding out the human design type with most of my clients that I work with, because it really helps me tune into the energetics of like how they are like wanting, how much energy they can really put towards the process of their growth in increments, you know, because we all have energy sources that we can tap into. And we have to be real with ourselves, you know, like how fast we can go. And some people need to have a lot more rest in their body in between.
Yeah. So I want to go back to you are the owner and founder of a clothing brand, which is so fucking cool. like, did you go to school for fashion design? Do you have some fashion design experience, or was it just like a cosmic download that's like, Peggy, you are going to design women's clothing?
You know what? It's such an interesting story because I was born into a family of really creative women. A lot of my aunts from Syria, from the Middle East, were they sewed their own clothes. They would get magazines from France and they would replicate the clothing in these French magazines. And then they would be like the coolest ladies walking in the Syrian culture, you know? So I saw my mom growing up making her own clothes, making her own patterns. So I almost feel like for me, being a designer was almost passed down to me. Like I don't even know if I chose it. It just really was like a part of my upbringing and it bonded me to my mom. You know, it was something that we did together. We would make our Halloween costumes together. So I think I went to FIDM, which is a Fashion Institute of Design here in Los Angeles. And it's a wonderful school. And I studied product development and fashion design. So I just felt like it was natural for me to be a clothing designer. Like it was never even a question. Like, you know, so I played with that for a long time. And I was also very attached to that role. And when I started getting into the yoga and the somatic work, the healing, the trauma work, I almost felt like I was breaking up with this part of myself that I felt really guilty about because it was so connected to like a lineage of my family members, right? Yeah. I was like, if I leave being a designer, am I going to be a bad daughter? You know, am I going to disappoint? Am I... So there was all these feelings attached to it, but then I was like, wait, I can do both, you know? So I was able to juggle it and still, I'm still trying to figure out that perfect rhythm for me. But I love being, I think clothing is an expression, you know, the colors we wear, the way that we want to allow ourselves to feel, you know, it's a form of embodiment that's being showcased on the outside of our bodies. So we have that opportunity and luxury to play with ourselves in that way that we can get creative and spend a little extra time doing that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let's talk about self-expression then. So, I would love to know more about self-expression as a facet of connecting with our inner selves, maybe connecting to our higher selves, our child selves, like besides fashion, which that's a really obvious one, but what are some other ways that you connect to yourself through expression?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our inner child are always with us, right? Yeah. So we're always like, hey, you know, like, what does she want? You know, does she want color today? Does she want to like, does she want to be more like recluse and like, you know, hiding herself? So I think every day is an opportunity to reconnect with yourself in a new way. So I think that's the beauty of this life. Like we don't have to be the same way every day. And it's these modalities that we get to, these tools that we have, and we get to use them to step into that moment of expression. So whether it's dancing, you know, whether it's movement, like movement is huge for me, you know, yoga is a great way to connect the body to the breath. So for me, this self-expression, it's a continuous like self-discovery of who we are and us allowing ourselves to take it a little bit further to see where we want to be more expressed. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I recognize that we can see somebody else modeling it to us and something evokes in our body and we're like, oh, why? That person really, I was really attracted to them, you know, like they did this thing. And then I sit with that. I'm like, is it because that part of me hasn't lived its expression yet? Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, I don't look at, you know, there's a lot of jealousy out there between women, right? And for me, I really don't see it that way. I'm like, wow, I'm inspired by that woman. Like she's doing her thing. She's creating her magic and she's awakening something in me because there's a part of me that wants to be more expressed. And especially coming from like a Middle Eastern culture, which is more suppressed and which women, you know, in the Middle East, they actually are completely covered up. So everything is hidden. So that's kind of where I see, us being able to explore and connect to other people in that way, you know, and share those experiences too. Like telling that person, you really inspired me. Like, actually I'll say that to you, Lindsay, like I was so inspired by your videos of you expressing your vulnerability in emotions that you put out in social media. I was like, wow, that was really raw and genuine and took a lot of guts, you know?
Yeah, thank you for seeing me.
You're welcome. And I was like, oh, where can I, where, like that opened a portal in me when I saw that.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you're bringing this up because I'm currently reading a book by Sue Monk Kidd, excuse me, Sue Monk Kidd called The Dance of the Dissident Daughter. And it's about her upbringing in conservative evangelical Christianity, which is a very patriarchal religion. There's a lot of suppression of women in there, as well as in the Middle East. So I feel like, and I grew up that way. So I feel like even though we had different cultures and traditions that we grew up in, the patriarchal aspect and the suppression of women is similar. And she talks about like waking up to the fact that as a woman in this suppressed patriarchal religion, she was like a second class citizen, basically. Like even the fact that, you know, there's no female pronouns in the language of Christianity, right? Like God is a man, the leaders of the 12 tribes of Israel were all men, the leaders of the church are supposed to be men. Like it's all male focused, and women are there to serve men and support men and kind of be the background woman who makes her man look good. You know? It's really gross. And the way that you're talking about self-expression, it just makes me think about that. And it makes me think about how, really, regardless of religion, there's so much female suppression, even among, like, cancel me for saying this, even among white women, there's still a lot of suppression because of this wounded relationship that women have with each other. And it's based on competition, jealousy, like you said. In fact, I have recently come into awareness of a totally subconscious pattern in myself that now it's a conscious pattern, and I'm like, ooh, that's icky. And it is this the way that whenever I walk into a room and there's women there, I immediately subconsciously start to try to figure out, in this group of women, where do I line up? Like, and
Wow.
it feels icky to admit that out loud. You know, just like it's so drilled into me to compare myself to other women that at 40 years old, I will walk into a group of women and still I'm subconsciously like comparing, where do I line up here? You know?
Oh, I got a little heartbreak when you said that.
Yeah, it is really heartbreaking. It really is. And I think that what you're saying about that resonance that women feel, like you watching my videos on Instagram, and there was something in you that was like resonant, right? Like it was like, and so often people think that whatever resonates is like, it feels like this good, warm, juicy, like, ooh, yes, feeling. But sometimes what resonates is also like, ooh, I don't want that, because it's a part of you that gets triggered by another woman's expression and is like longing to be expressed also, right? And so I find that it usually goes two ways. Either it's like what you're saying, which is like a very conscious, aware, like I see what you're doing and it inspires me and it feels like a yes to me and it opens me up. But then there's also that I see what you're doing and that is offensive and it's wrong and I don't want to be like that at all. And often there's like a part down inside there that's like, but actually, that's exactly how I want to express. But we just have so much judgment around it, you know? I don't know. I'm curious if you have anything you want to add to that.
I think, like you said, when we bring these thoughts to the conscious mind, right, we're definitely having this opportunity to heal. And we're just, we're recognizing the shadow elements of ourselves that are surfacing and the pain that you've probably been carrying for the last, at least 30 years, maybe, and it's surfacing and it wants to be let go. It wants to be released. It wants to have no judgment around that. So you can be in that unconditional love and acceptance. So it's a conscious work to move through those layers and get to that place where now I get to heal. Now I get to heal. If we keep going there, then we can actually prioritize our healing, like make that really important for us. And that's definitely my work, because this life is so, you know, it's so short. It's gonna pass like this, you know, and we want to be able to enjoy it. We want to be able to not be in the suffering, you know?
Yeah. This is exactly why I signed up for a sensual movement dance class. I was watching these like pole dancers and strippers on Instagram, and it like grated on my nerves. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, ugh, why do these women need to post this publicly? Like, can't they just keep this private? Can't this just stay between them and their husbands? Like, And I just noticed I was like so triggered and so judgmental about it that I was like, I need to sign up for a sensual movement class. Like, I'm going to go straight into the belly of the beast, and like, I'm going to heal this trigger.
I always say you have to walk into the fire, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's that part of you that is, it's waiting to be healed. And when, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's been transformational for me. Like, it's not triggering for me at all. And in fact, now I post videos of myself, and I have people in my audience who are like, ugh, I can't believe you would post this. You should keep this private between you and your husband. Blah. You know,
I think I saw you post something about that. I was like, gosh, why? I don't understand, you know, but you know, that's their form of expression. So
yeah. So another form of expression, and I think it's the truest form of expression, I'm curious what you think, is embodiment. Mm-hmm. So I would love if we could talk about embodiment as expression. And I know there are men who listen to this show, but I'm not a man, and I want to talk about expressing and embodying the feminine. So, but let's go there.
Oh, actually, I just wrote down something this morning, and it says to be embodied is to feel everything. Mm. Right. And I wrote that down. I took some notes for our
nice
podcast. So I wanted to remember to say that, because we so a lot of times think that when we feel pain or when we feel suffering or we're moving through it, it's something that we need to push away, or we need to like project it out, right? Instead of, the embodiment is the full expression of all of those feelings that we're feeling. Yeah. The sadness, the crying, whatever it is that wants to be released. So embodying the feminine is a huge acceptance of who we are and who we're continuously choosing to be for ourselves, and the nurturing that we're providing for ourselves. You know, a lot of this healing takes a lot of kindness and care. It's almost like that inner child reassuring her over and over, making sure she's safe. So building, you know, I know you talk about this in your work a lot, like safety in the body, you know, mm-hmm. how can a woman feel feminine and embodied if she's not feeling safe?
Yeah.
How, you know? Yeah. So it all starts with bringing that self-responsibility back to ourselves and our body, and taking those daily actions to set ourselves up for that expression. So to me, it's very, there's a lot of discipline around it. You know, I'm committed to this. Therefore, like, this is the process, right? So whether it's, I do Wim Hof's breath work every day. You know why? Because I wake up with anxiety. The stress of the day is facing me, right? So I don't want to bring that into the day. So I do my Wim Hof breathing. Right when I do that, it alkalines my body, and I feel like I got a reset. Like, literally, the anxiety is gone.
Yeah.
So it won't, until we try these different modalities and see what works for our body and helps us step into it, and then find the support, whether it's a coach, a therapist, just recognizing that we can't do it alone.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning stages, you know?
Yeah.
So embodying the feminine to me is really taking care of yourself and getting to the core roots of loving yourself. Mm-hmm. Because that embodiment will surface.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, I get people tell me all the time on Instagram, whenever I do share like a vulnerable, well, to them it's vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. To them, I'm putting myself in a vulnerable position, and I'm mm-hmm. sharing something vulnerable.
Yeah.
But what I want to tell those women, and I haven't figured out how to say this yet without it sounding like snarky, and I don't mean it in a snarky way, but it's like, that doesn't feel vulnerable to me. Like I get to you as the watcher or as the consumer of this content, whenever you see a woman like in her sacred rage and she's embodying that and expressing that fully, you perceive that as, oh my God, she's so vulnerable. But like, I don't perceive myself that way. To me, it's just like, this is the most natural, authentic thing I can do. And it's not hard. And I think a lot of women, I'm happy that they look up to me and admire me for sure. Like I want to inspire women, but I don't know how to move past like, this inspires you because it's vulnerable and maybe you don't feel ready to be vulnerable, but like, what if you were inspired because it was authentic and you were able to like move through the vulnerability because you can't wait to get to authentic. Does that make sense?
Yes. That makes so much sense. And I think, you know, for a lot of people though, they do maybe get stuck at the vulnerability piece, you know, that's where they can't even access that part of themselves.
Yeah. It feels so tender that it's like, oh, I got to like touch it with like gloves on, you know, like I got to handle it so carefully because it might break and it doesn't, like it only makes you stronger.
Yes, that actually reminds me of a really quick story if I can share with
Please.
You. In my 20s, my sister signed me up for these workshops. They were like self-development expression workshops. And she was an actress at the time. Now she's a therapist. And so she's like, I think you'd really enjoy this workshop. And she put me in this workshop with my mom, okay? And it was this workshop where it was super deep. People were sharing like deep, dark secrets. And this was all new to me at the time, my 20s. And I'm just sitting here like disassociating, frozen. I was like, what is happening? You know, like people are talking about their traumas. But I remember not even being able to access my vulnerability because I couldn't access my pain. So there were so many parts of myself that I had numbed out. So vulnerability was an area that I also decided at some point in my life that I'm not going to be vulnerable. And in this workshop, I saw other people being so open with their vulnerability. And I started judging myself like, oh my God, why am I not like that? Why can I access that part of myself? And I even remember going to the coach and saying that to him. And he said, well, you're able to cry for the other person, because I would cry when they would cry.
Right.
So the vulnerability is actually in you, but you can't be vulnerable with yourself. So that's an area that you want to work on.
That's good.
You know, so it's, we all have, you know, sometimes when we see people on social media embodying these parts of themselves and we look at it and we have to kind of dissect ourselves in that process so we can really understand what part of us wants to like come out and is stuck, you know?
Yeah. And this reminds me of a lot of women who follow me. When I do post a video of myself, like with doing central movement, for example, or doing anger work, you know, two different sides, like totally opposite things, sometimes, but, it's amazing how many women are like, but what if I don't want to move this way? What if I don't want to go into a central dance class or whatever? And I have to like say it every single time that your expression doesn't have to look like mine. Like the point is that when you are liberated from the expectations of culture, of religion, of our society, when you're liberated from the voices in your head that judge everything and keep you stuck and safe and small, like when you're liberated from all of that, you get to choose what your expression is. So it doesn't have to look like mine. Right? Like this is what I've chosen. But if you want to choose to express in some totally different way, like I'm going to be the first person who's like cheering you on, even if it doesn't look like how freedom and liberation and expression look for me.
Yes. And I think that's what embodiment is. It's that authenticity, going back to that word you said earlier, like authenticity of finding your own expression, like finding access to that and not comparing and not looking for that guidance and going really inward and just revealing it out. So that's so beautiful. I love that you do the sensual work and the anger work. They're both kind of like, there's an extremeness to it, but when they even come together, the softness and the shadow side, you know, it's so beautiful to to be able to heal all these parts of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it literally shows that the feminine is capable of so much range, right? Yes. The feminine isn't just like the pretty, docile, like subservient wife and mother, you know, like that is one expression of the feminine.
Yes. Yes.
But
yes.
The feminine can be so many different expressions. And like, honestly, sometimes like the deeper I go into this work, that this has been the exact direction that I've been going in, is more into feminine expression and embodiment. And I don't follow very many accounts on Instagram. Like I try to keep the number of accounts I follow to less than 50 people. Mm-hmm. So I don't follow a lot of like feminine embodiment accounts or masculine feminine polarity accounts. And to be really honest with you, I think a lot of them are like quasi harmful and also bullshit mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Like they feel like, to me, whenever I can't go into some of those spaces, I'm like, I can see where you're going with this, but something mm-hmm. about it still feels really shallow to me. And like, I can't quite put my finger on it. So I really don't dabble in those spaces a lot. Mm-hmm. For me, it's much more like intuitive, and it's about like, well, what feels good in me? And it's also having the awareness of when I am repressing something, of mm-hmm. whenever I'm second guessing myself and something I desire. It's allowing myself to be led by desire instead of being led by what I don't want to experience or what I want to avoid. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like, I think that it's important and necessary sometimes to have teachers and mentors mm-hmm. and support people. But I also think that sometimes it's important to like turn off all the noise and like go within and find what feels true for you. So I'm curious, like, have you had a bunch of like feminine embodiment mm-hmm. teachers or like mentors or elders that you've looked up to? Or is this something that you've come into because you shut out all the other noise and you were like, I'm going to figure out what feels right mm-hmm. for me? Was it a combination of both? Just curious for you.
Yeah, no, it's been a really interesting journey because honestly, like I said, like I really didn't think I was going to move out of being in fashion, right? So, you know, while I was in my fashion world, I was taking salsa classes like 2-3 nights a week, you know, after I'd be working all day. And I would just go by myself to a salsa club, not know anybody, and just immerse myself in the music and just the freeness of like, I'm doing this for myself. Like I'm not even going with a partner. So it was a very slow process. And it was a combination of like, you know, doing deep therapy work and just realizing like, I'm already a very heady person. Like I analyze, I like to like understand everything, but there was this disconnect between my mind and my body. They worked separately. They didn't work together. So, I would realize that when I would go to these dance classes, like I would be so extreme there. So I wanted to find the merging of it. So yoga was really one of the things that really, tapped me in, because it was quiet, right? So in salsa, like it was beautiful and sensual and very feminine, but yoga, especially if you do a yoga practice that you're holding the postures for like 3 to 5 breaths, you're really with yourself, you know, you're really feeling all these like kinks in you that you're like, oh, I feel a little tightness there, I feel a little knot there. So you're kind of going through a body mapping and tracking. So for me, it's been like, I pulled a little bit from here, I pulled a little bit from there. And then I was like, okay, there's something here that I really need to explore more. And that was when, like, I don't know if you know David Deida. Mm-hmm. I love his work of polarity and, you know,
He is not one of the teachers that I think is like shallow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He's the real deal, I think, you know? Yeah. And I love his work. I read his books all the time. So he was definitely one of my teachers. And so it's that with the combination of a lot of the cultural things too, as well, like in the Middle Eastern cultures, we do a lot of dance, you know, we do a lot of singing and we're very artistic. So, but we kind of keep it more behind the scenes. So, it's just been kind of a combination of all these different aspects of my life that I was exposed to. Yeah. And I just kept getting a calling, but it was a very, like, it's been a long process, you know? And I think because similar to the religious aspect you brought up, like culturally, you know, I grew up in a really conservative environment, you know, like I was very risque in my community, you know, didn't get married when I was supposed to, like wore short dresses. Like I always did the thing that, like, you know, I wasn't really supposed to. So I didn't want to be like too much of a rebel. So I don't think I really let myself explore the way that I think I really wanted to. And that was my journey, right? So now I'm like, I keep giving myself that freedom to, like, you know, I say I'm not in a conservative family now, so no one's saying that I need to do this. So I have to give myself, I choose to give myself that that freedom to express. And that's a constant work in itself, you know, because it's a reprogramming of that conditioning that we were born into.
Yeah. And it's like that permission is never going to be given to you from outside of yourself. It has to come from within. So
exactly. So that little voice, you know, definitely does come up, you know? But yeah, it's somatic work is so beautiful. And yoga has really opened the doors for me. And I, you know, it's probably like 15 years and I'm still practicing. I got my yoga teacher certification and I don't teach like in groups or anything, but I do my own flow and it's something that I'm really, really committed to. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you've talked about your yoga practice, and I think yoga practice is like a practice that a lot of people are familiar with, but I would love to talk about practices in general, like practice as a spiritual discipline. Mm-hmm. My current practice, like, you can laugh. It's okay if you laugh. But my current practice is weeding my garden.
Ooh.
And I have decided, because I resist it so much. Like, I hate weeding so much. And I resist it. I avoid it. And then, like, by July, the weeds have gotten so big that then they're overwhelming and I definitely don't want to deal with them. So I have decided that my summer spiritual practice is every day I'm going to go weed, whether it's for 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. I'm going to do the practice of weeding because, again, it's like that central movement class, right? Like, I can feel that resistance in my body, but there's no logical threat present, yes, but my body is like, there's a threat here. And so for me, a practice is going into uncomfortable places again and again and again, knowing that you can stop whenever you need to, and you're always safe throughout it. And like titrating that up to widen your window of tolerance to something that felt really intolerable or something that you resisted before. So I'm curious if you could elaborate more, like outside of yoga, like just about practices and how they prepare us, how they widen our windows of tolerance, also how practices and daily rituals can kind of be the same thing, and how that is part of our self-care and our self-love. So let's go there.
Yeah, no, I love that. It actually reminds me of, I studied with Sadhguru.
Ooh.
He's this incredible, you know, guru from India. And I'm a little bit hesitant to, you know, work with gurus. I'm just like, okay.
Sure. Lots of reasons why.
Yeah, there's a lot of like cult conversations. I was like, I don't even want to go in that direction. But he came into my life through a roommate who I witnessed just doing her practice every day, never talking to me about it, just in her own element, in her own world. And there was something about that I was drawn to, like, oh, she's not telling me about it, but like, what is she doing? You know, like, it got me really curious. So I ended up doing a couple of his workshops, and he would talk about how important it is to be mindful and meditate while you're doing the things that you don't really love doing. Because when you insert meditation into it, it actually creates a different chemical reaction to that experience. So you're kind of opening yourself up in a way that a lot of our conditioning is what we were born into. So if we have a memory of, like, let's say washing dishes, we saw our mom do it and she didn't look happy. So we registered that in our mind in a certain way. So it's all that reprogramming. So for me, a lot of the work is knowing that we were born into a family system and recognizing when that family system is a driving force in our current state. So it's about recognizing those patterns. Oh, I'm doing this because of my childhood, you know,
experience. Having that awareness.
So that's number one, obviously. You know, they say awareness.
Always.
So one of the things that for me outside of my yoga is I got into Kundalini a lot too when I started doing the yoga practice. And it was very different than yoga because it was a very, there was not a lot of movement to it, but you would hold these postures for like 5, 7, 8 minutes. And it re talk about pushing through your resistance. Like you wouldn't think holding this for 5 minutes would be hard. Oh, it's hard, right? And so I guess in Kundalini, your brain waves start to change because now you're pushing through your resistance in a way that your mind is like it's adjusting. So that's going to now affect the next decision and the next decision. So when we constantly do these daily practices, we're seeing the results over time throughout the day, not in that very moment right away. So that's the discipline part. When we register that we're doing this for the self-care, for the self-love, for us setting ourselves up for to be in our highest self. So we do these practices as a way to keep stepping into that. You know, so the nervous system regulation is a huge part of it. You know, if you're somebody that was born into trauma, all you know is a dysregulated nervous system. So you're creating from that dysregulation. You're attracting work and jobs from that dysregulation and getting into toxic environments. So it's about recognizing and being aware, like, is my body, how's my body feeling right now? How am I feeling safe? Bringing that safety back into our body. So all of these disciplines for me have become really, really important because I really wanted to change my life from what I was like how I was born into. Like it was like a night and day for me, you know? Like grew up as an immigrant woman. Like I came here when I was 5. So I was stuck between two cultures completely. One, you know, half of the day I'm speaking English, half of the day I'm speaking Armenian. So I felt split, you know? So being in that body, I never really felt centered. And that's why I think yoga brought that to me. It made me really find my true self and accept that part. But these practices are so important, you know. If you recognize that you're very negative with your thoughts, practice a gratitude journal every single day for a year, not for a week, not for 3 months, you know. So that's the pattern you're recognizing. I have negative thoughts. Okay, what's the contrast of that? Okay. If I'm not really loving my body, what is it that you're not loving your body? Do you want to be like, do you feel like your frame is too big for you? Like, what do you feel? You know, like what's the truth that you're feeling? Do you want to be a strong body? Is that what you're craving? Like for me, I don't really care about weight. It's for me when I start to get soft, I want to feel strong. Like I want to feel like I can protect myself, you know? So it's not like I'm fat or I'm skinny, none of that. But it's more like I'm building strength for my body, you know? So when we recognize these parts of ourselves that want to evolve and grow, and they're not stuck the way we were when we were a child, we get to step into that adult self and make wiser decisions for ourselves. You know what I mean?
So this brings me back to feminine embodiment as a practice. What does that look like?
Getting out of the head for sure, you know, like completely, like actually, like you know, in therapy, they say they do therapy from bottom up. So like start with the feet, you know, really feeling your pelvic core area, your hips, like just bring movement into the body wherever you feel a little bit stagnant. There's just, you know, it's really also like what makes you feel feminine? Like, you know, like does getting your nails done make you feel feminine? Okay, like maybe make that part of your monthly ritual, you know, like I get my nails done once a month. And so whatever it is that you just feel like will help you tap into it, like I feel like we get this physical body as well, right? So it's all about bringing it all together. So I also think sex can be a really beautiful way to bring in that feminine energy, you know, and transmute also like a lot of, you know, trauma that can be released through the embodiment of like the feminine through sexual pleasure. So there's so many different ways to look at it. Like, but I think some first layers are just to really recognize where you're feeling blocked, you know, and how to help yourself heal and create more safety so you can feel more and more safe to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's great. And I would also offer like a counterpart to that of like, yes, here's where I feel blocked. Like I can feel that it feels sticky. It feels kind of clunky. Yes. And for me, I have found that sometimes I can focus a little bit too much on what feels blocked. And like, I can focus a little bit too much on the pain. Yeah. And so something that's been really powerful for me into shifting into more embodiment is, yes, recognizing where I feel blocked or where I feel pain, but also orienting more towards what feels good and what brings pleasure and what feels like desire. And like, that has made my body a much safer place to be because I'm not always focused on what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Like yes. I'm more focused on what feels good, what feels mm-hmm. pleasurable, what feels like it's leading me closer to my desires. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. both. And I just wanted to like interject.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's why the pleasure piece is very, very important, you know, and the play and the joy, you know, like finding the joy in so much in life. So yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. So I have a bullet point here on my notes and I'm like, I don't know how to word it as a question, but I really want to talk about it. Cause I'm like, oh, let's talk about this. So the bullet point just says the energetics around stepping into your full power and what that feels like.
Ooh.
I don't even know how to ask a question out of that.
The energetics, this, like to really step into our full power.
And what that feels like.
Oh, God. Well, when I feel into that in my body, as you said that, like I right away felt fear about it because, you know, there's so much like pressure also like of us fully showing up, like, you know, but ooh. It's got me in my feelings for sure.
That's okay. Take a minute if you need one.
Yeah.
You don't have to be perfect on this podcast.
Thank you. I mean, being in our power, I think is very much connected to releasing perfectionism.
100%.
You know, because we, like I said, we can look at somebody and see them in their power. Okay. That's what it looks like to be in your power. No, it doesn't. You will feel it in your body. It's all back to the way that the body feels. And I actually think it has a lot to do with feeling safe. Mm-hmm. So the more safety you can feel inside and not look for any outside validation. So feeling safe in your body and owning all these elements of yourself, like you said, the range, you know, that will allow us to accept ourselves as we are, love ourselves as we are, and continue this path forward of like courage into the new elements of ourselves that's still waiting to be born.
Yeah.
You know, but like knowing that you're really in your power, I guess like what would you say, like what would give you that affirmation? Like
that I'm in my power?
Yeah.
Like you said, I think safety is a big piece of it. I think it's knowing that like, it's knowing that I can resource myself mm-hmm. to like that my resources within are enough. And so whether I need to defend myself or whether I want to express myself with sensual movement or whether I want to go outside and weed my garden, it's like, even if there's resistance, my power is in recognizing the resistance and stepping forward anyway.
Yes.
And also knowing the difference between what is fear-based resistance. Mm-hmm. So like mm-hmm. that I'm resisting something because I'm afraid it's going to be hard, or I'm afraid mm-hmm. it's going to hurt, or I'm afraid it's not going to work, or I'm afraid, of the change that might happen within myself. Right. So it's like, it's resistance, but it's fear-based. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel the most powerful whenever I can feel fear-based resistance and go into it anyway. I also feel really powerful when I feel that intuitive resistance, that's mm-hmm. my body and my soul just going, no, this isn't for us. Like, and there's no judgment attached to it, right? It's just like a very neutral, like, no, this just isn't for me. It doesn't resonate with me. And it's been a journey. I mean, I'm definitely still in the process of like discerning what intuitive resistance and fear-based resistance feels like the difference in those, because what I've noticed is that, the more regulated, I'm curious if this is true for you. What I've noticed, the more regulated I am in my nervous system, the trickier and sneakier my ego has gotten. Because I no longer need the like huge emotional waves of like ego to figure something out. Like I used to need that. That was a dysregulated pattern. And it's like the safer I've gotten in my body, the more regulated I am, my ego's calmed down a lot. But sometimes my ego can be really sneaky and tricky, and it feels a lot like my higher self sometimes, because it's not, air quotes, as dysregulated as it was before. And so that's why I'm saying that the difference between intuitive resistance and fear-based resistance sometimes is a fine line for me, because my ego isn't quite as like loud and crazy as it used to be.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I remember like earlier this year, I felt like I was going through a deep ego death, you know? And I was trying to really release a lot of the roles and just keep asking myself, okay, these are the roles you play. Like, but who's Peggy?
Yeah.
Like, who's Peggy? Like, just keep coming back to like my values, my core. Like, who am I? Like, who am I like playing these roles, you know? So I totally understand. And I think it's this work is so powerful, because it's a continuing like self-discovering ourselves in a way that like tomorrow I'm finding out stuff about me that I didn't know.
Right.
You know, and it's so beautiful. And so, but I will say one of the areas that I know I recognize in myself when I'm not in my power is I start to feel very small. Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like I'm shrinking to that. The wounded inner child is coming to surface. So when that happens, I know that in order to step into my fullest power, I must nurture that part of myself first, instead of trying to fake it or have the ego step in.
Yeah. Instead of ego energy being like, I'll just overcome it.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Actually nurturing the inner child so that that part of you is integrated and everyone and everything is ready to go forward together.
Yes.
Not,
yes.
Not ego forcing it.
Yes. And that is something that I did a lot in my 30s, where I just like forced myself through things. And I thought that was my way of breaking through.
Yeah.
But the nurturing part, the loving myself, the vulnerability, I was just like, you know, stomping on that part of myself. So it's really about bringing everything kind of into balance and knowing when to just stop and say, this is what's happening internally. Like, this is where I need to be focusing in right now. Because in a society where it's all go, 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 we get, you know, sidetracked of how important it is to nurture ourselves.
Yeah. We totally do.
And we have to keep standing for it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like sometimes our own complacency is like our worst enemy, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Ouch. Let that sink in. Sometimes your own complacency is your worst enemy. I had another thought come up while you were talking about stepping into your power. This kind of goes back to what I was sharing earlier about when people watch the videos of me doing anger work and how their perception is, oh my God, that's so vulnerable. But my perception of myself is like, this feels so natural. This feels like the most authentic thing I can do. This wasn't hard for me to share publicly. Like, I don't feel shame or I don't feel weird about this, right? Like, I'm not afraid for other people to see this. And, that feels really powerful to me. Like, I have a huge wound around being seen. Like, and I mean, seen, I don't know what many women mean when they say this, but I know a lot of women say like, I don't want to be seen, or I'm afraid of being seen. I'm afraid of being visible. I don't know what all of them mean when for them personally, but for me, like, I grew up not only as an evangelical Christian, where my morality and my thoughts were judged, like when my clothing and things were judged. So it felt very performative. Like I always had to put on a good performance for God and for everyone else watching to make sure I was a good little Christian girl. But I also grew up and started baton twirling. And I was a competitive baton twirler starting at the age of 6. And it was drilled into me, like, how lucky of a girl I was to be able to do this. And like, my mom cleaned houses so she could pay for my twirling lessons and costumes and shoes and batons and competition entry fees, travel to competitions. Like, twirling is like ice skating. It's not a cheap sport. You know, it's not like you like sign up for the baseball team and you pay your $100 for your uniform and you're done. It's like, it's thousands of dollars, like, sport. Wow. And it wasn't even a sport that I chose. Like, my mom chose it for me. And it's not a team sport. So when you're competing as a twirler, you're competing against other twirlers in your general age and ability level, but you compete by yourself. So like, you're in front of the judge, you're twirling by yourself. The judge has a person sitting next to them, and the entire time you're twirling, you have to smile, you have to point your toes, you have to have your free hand out like perfectly. You can't drop the baton, and like, any mistake that you make, that judge is watching the whole time, and they're telling the person next to them, and they're writing it down on a scorecard. And then you get your scorecard back after they place you. You get first place, second place, third place, whatever. And you get your scorecard back, and it shows how many times you dropped the baton, when your free hand wasn't perfect, when your toe wasn't perfect, when you weren't smiling. Like, it's this whole thing. And it wasn't fucking fun for me. And it, that coupled with this moral, spiritual expectation and judgment of Christianity, it was like, I always felt like somebody was fucking watching me and judging everything I did. So being seen for me is like, no, I don't want to be seen, because being seen means I'm going to be judged. It means that you're watching for every little mistake I might make. And so I feel powerful when I can allow myself to be seen. And even if people are critical or judgmental of what I'm doing, when it can roll off of me and like not even really affect me, that feels fucking powerful to me.
Yes, yes, yes. Wow. Wow. I can't even imagine.
It just felt so good to like offload that just now. Like, I felt like I was in an altered state of consciousness.
Yeah, you definitely, I felt like I was able to visualize what you went through. Wow, girl. Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, so that my wound is around being seen, right? But other women's they have different wounds, or for them being seen looks different. But the, at the bottom of all of it is like, if I am terrified to embody and express my most authentic self, then I'm never going to widen my window of tolerance to being seen.
Yes, 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 yes. And also moving through that fear of when you were little and you were seen, it was fear of like, am I going to be accepted if I don't show up for this?
Right.
You know? So that safety, it almost wants to like there's a part of you that safety, you're craving that safety now as an adult to show up from that authenticity, to show up in that pure way. Wow. That's.
Yeah. And what's really funny is like I take videos of myself doing sensual movement, for example, because that's part of my dance class. As our instructor is like, I want you taking videos of yourself, and I want you to save them so that at the end of this year, you can go back to the videos and you can see the progression of how you've improved, and like how you looked like an awkward, clunky baby giraffe when you first started, and you know, and then you like improve, and I'm already seeing it. Like, I really am. But what's really funny is that even though I take these videos of myself and I post them on Instagram, or I'll take a video of myself and I'll send it to my husband, you know, and just be like, enjoy, wink, or something like that. I have not yet allowed my husband to like watch me doing that dancing in real time. Like I still do it with the door closed and the shade drawn. And so there's still an there that because that feels so tender. Like, what if you see me and I mess up, or I like fall down, or I look really awkward and you judge it, you know? So even with my own husband, who's the safest person in the world for me, there's still that trepidation about, I don't know if it's safe for you to see me in real time. Like, so I want everyone listening to know that, like, I have not figured this out yet, but I'm working on it.
Yes. And that reminds me of this term that they use in acting, like it's called breaking character. So it's like when somebody's playing a role and then something just happens to the body that like, it just, you break your character. And that used to actually happen to me a lot in dancing because I was breaking through how uncomfortable I was to be this sexy. Because in a culture where you're either a belly dancer or you're covered up, like, you know, and to be a belly dancer, it's like, you know, that wasn't really accepted in the family system. Like you went to concerts to be entertained by belly dancers. So for me, as I was coming out, I would break my character. Like I would be in my sensuality and be my feminine. All of a sudden I'd be like, okay, that's enough. I can't do anymore.
Yes.
Like I hit my limit. Like I feel, it just feels too exposing right now.
Yeah.
So I would stop. So every time I would go show up again, I would push that a little bit. But when I would try to get into that being in romantic relationships, I would notice myself breaking character too. Like this feels too sexy. This feels just too exposing. So working through that resistance in the body with someone who's safe, like your husband, and letting them see that part of what's being healed is that little girl that went through so much, you know, like in her experience that she shouldn't have carried all that, you know?
Yeah.
And so it is in a way, I think it will show up through this dance and releasing all of that. So
I definitely feel the resistance.
So I like to call it breaking. It's like you're breaking, not character, but you're breaking that, like you're going in and out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah. That's exactly how it feels. It's like going in and out of it. And it doesn't feel inauthentic. It just feels like right now, this
window
is,
of tolerance.
Right. Within my window of tolerance. I would love to be able to practice to widen my window of tolerance and then eventually invite my husband to actually like let me like entertain him.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But like, I still have some work to do with my expression and my embodiment. And
yes.
I mean, you're a designer of a clothing brand. Like you're seen, dude, you're seen a lot. Does that feel, when you first started, did that feel really vulnerable and scary? Or was it just like, nah, this is just what I was meant to do?
You know, I felt like I was, I wasn't tapped into myself at the time. So I kind of used it as this mask in the beginning, you know, like the clothing is this way that I can drape myself and look beautiful. Like I can look beautiful on the outside. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but because I hadn't worked on the inside over time, like my desire to work on myself kept surfacing. So it wasn't until really the two came together, I felt really authentic.
Yeah.
You know, growing up also, I had a lot of anxiety because I didn't, when you don't really know yourself, like the anxiety comes in to like disrupt you, to be like, knock, knock, like you need to wake up. Like, this is not all, this is not it, you know? So I think just recognizing that there's a physicality of beauty and there's an internal aspect. So at some point I woke up to it just not being about the physicality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, there was just this feeling in me that I was like, there's just more. So I didn't feel like I was really exposed because it wasn't until I really did the healing work and really started speaking up about my own like vulnerability that felt really exposing to me. Like talking about my childhood felt really exposing to me. Like talking about the traumas or like being an immigrant woman and like not knowing where I fit in, like that was more, like that brought my pain to surface, you know? So that felt really real to me versus, like putting on a costume or putting on clothes that for me was a way that I was also hiding.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
Curious, how do you do with like being naked in front of people?
I'm not a nudist, so
I mean, do you ever like take like co-ed saunas or like like skinny dipping with people or like anything like that?
I'm not there yet,
Okay.
but I have been in environments where friends have wanted to go to like different places where everyone's nude, and I just don't feel comfortable to go bottomless. I just feel like that is for me a very sacred place that I want to really just experience with my partner. But I have nothing against it. I think it's bodies are beautiful, and maybe one day I will feel comfortable, you know. But I think it's how do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, I just asked because you were talking about clothing being something that like covered or whatever. Yeah, nakedness is a it's been an experience for me. I do feel totally comfortable like naked in front of people now.
Amazing.
But like being raised as an evangelical Christian, first and foremost, like the naked body is like bad and sinful, and it's supposed to be covered, especially if you're a woman, because you might cause a man to lust after you. Right? So it's my responsibility to protect men from my own body. But it's just such a paradox. But it was also like I was taught that like nakedness was like only for sex, and so that meant that your naked body could like only be seen by your husband. And so in my mind, like a naked co-ed sauna, before I experienced that for myself, and this was proven wrong, I believed like, oh my God, you get a bunch of men and women together in like a hot, sweaty room, and it's just going to be like a sex fest. Like, and then to, when I first, like, so I live in northern Minnesota, and like sauna is a huge part of the culture here. Like, almost everyone I know has a sauna because it's part of the culture.
That's so cool.
So like when I first started taking saunas with my friends, they would all take all of their clothes off, but I would still wear like a bathing suit, or I would wear like underwear and a tank top or something. And nobody ever pressured me, and nobody was ever like, oh, you're supposed to do it naked or whatever. Like it was just like, however you feel comfortable is fine. And I should also point out, it was my own sauna that we were like all in, and I still didn't even feel comfortable being naked in my own sauna. So,
On your own, would you have felt
oh,
comfortable?
totally on my own. Yeah. Or with my husband. We did that all the time, but like in front of like friends, that was different. But then like after a few times of taking a sauna and having clothes on and being with people with no clothes and seeing that it really was safe and it wasn't a crazed sex fest and like nobody was getting handsy and nobody was violating anybody's boundaries and like the conversation was very wholesome and like it showed me like, okay, this can be safe. And so then I tried it and I sat naked in a group of men and women in a sauna and like it was fine. But it took me a bit to like work up to that. And now, I mean, I'll go skinny dipping, I'll take saunas, I'll run around my yard naked with like literally anyone. But
Love that.
it took a bit for me to get there, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's a beautiful personal choice, you know.
For sure.
Like for me, I don't know. I think it's something I'll still explore. But those cultural voices in my
Oh,
head.
they're crazy. They're, and I mean, I can imagine that Middle Eastern culture
My
is
God.
very similar. I mean, take Jesus and the Bible out of it, and it's very similar to evangelical Christianity in a lot of ways.
For sure. And because like we would go to the Middle East, like, you know, I would go to school during normal school time, and then during the summers for 3 months, I would be in the Middle East, you know. So I was like in and out of these different worlds. I'm like, who am I? Like, where do I fit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just. So I think for me, I'm always practicing ways that I want to definitely be more and more open and comfortable in my body. And so right now I'm really, really focused on the internal parts mm-hmm. of myself. It's really about, I'm doing a lot of work around not self-abandoning my mm-hmm. my own needs because of certain attachments, you know, the attachment styles. So they show up in our deeper relationships. So for me, a lot of, I'm doing this work right now called inner bonding. And it's all about like just coming back to self, coming back to self. And so everything outside of self is kind of like a bonus. You know, everything, like you're really cultivating a lot of like, again, safety and nurturing of the self. So we'll see how that transpires in the next few months.
That feels awesome. Well, is there anything that you wanted to make sure you got to say that you haven't said yet?
I mean, there's so much juicy information I think that we've covered, and I think you know, just remembering that our daily practice is our prayer, is our religion in a way. You know, and how important it is to not neglect our day-to-day practice and finding that commitment. So I feel like we talked a lot about this already, so I feel really good about this podcast, and I'm so excited that we were able to really connect on so many different ways, like being from different cultures and totally. You know, so
yeah, we are all more alike than we are different. For sure.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, can you tell my listeners where they can find you and
whatever
you want to share about yourself and your work?
Yeah. If you are interested in getting styled by me, I do Zoom sessions, so you can book that through daughtersofculture.com. So the clothing line is called Daughters of Culture. And I've had it for about 11 years now. So the brand was meant to really stand for women of all nationalities, women of the world. So I do a lot of different clothing. And so I get to work with you and style you in ways that I intuitively pick pieces that I feel like would really work with your energy source. You know, I'm really in tune with my clients. So that's where you can find the clothing. And then if you want to work with me business wise or personal coaching, the Sisterhood Agency, and they're both linked on Daughters of Culture too. So I'm all online. I'm in Los Angeles. So if you are here in LA, I'm always gathering women together here, part of this group called Sacred Sisters. We do like monthly like events. And there's just so much fun stuff to do here. So if you're in LA, definitely ping me. I would love to bring you into the community here.
That sounds amazing. Sounds so good. So is your clothing brand, is it all online or do you actually have a store?
So it's all online, but when I first started, I was traveling a lot and doing a lot of pop-ups pre-pandemic. So that's where I really marketed the brand. And I went to a lot of yoga festivals. I was really like every other week I was on a plane in a different state or even in Canada and Mexico. And that was really fun. And I'm so happy I did that before the pandemic because that really built my community. And now it's just online. And I do have a design studio here in Los Angeles that you can do private appointments.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. And people fly in to do that. And then I do a whole photo shoot with them.
Oh, cool.
So let's say you want to do like an embodied photo shoot, you know, we go to the beach or we'll rent a house and we'll create content for your brand, or even if it's just you want to make a calendar for yourself, you know?
Oh, I love it. I haven't had new photos of me taken in like 3 years. So it's like, it's time for sure. I've been thinking about it and I don't have a photographer near me. I live in the middle of nowhere, dude. Like, I'm 70 miles from the nearest city. So like, I'm a little under resourced when it comes to like photographers.
Yeah. You know what? It wouldn't hurt if you found one that you could just fly to you. Like think about your expenses, what works best for you.
Because
it's worth making that investment. I think having photos of yourself that you can see year to year and you can see your evolution the same way you're going to see your evolution through your dance videos.
Yeah. Totally.
You know? So let me know if I can support you in any way.
Okay. Thank you, Peggy. That gives me something to think about. Well, we will have links to everything that you mentioned with your work in the show notes of this episode. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for everything. Hi, Lindsay.
Bye, Peggy.